Welcome, everyone, to Lost Rhetoric. I'm your host, Jason Dinges. Thank you for being here with me. This is the 33rd episode. Thanks for being here. Thanks for jumping into the realm of the weird with me once again. And as usual, to all return listeners, I appreciate you coming back. And to all new listeners that might be out there, welcome to the show. We've got a good one for you tonight. If you didn't listen last week, there was a good episode that went down. It was me and Dave Angelini talking sex with aliens. That's right. We talked about people who have had sexual encounters with extraterrestrials. And if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to it. It's a doozy. And I think you would enjoy it. And if you did listen to it, I hope you did enjoy it. And I hope you told everyone that you enjoyed it and suggested that they listen to it as well. So let's get into what we always get into. Who listened to the last episode the most? This week, I say top five, but there's a top 10 because there's ties. There's like a four-way tie for fifth place. There's a three-way tie for fourth place. And I'm just going to rattle them off here because I think they're all deserving of a mention here. So coming in at number five here, a little four-way tie. Happy Valley, Oregon, back in the top five for the first time in weeks. You did it. You made it back. You clawed your way back, Happy Valley. Thank you for being with me. I guess you've never left, but more of you are back with me. I guess alien sex really does it for you out there. Seattle, Washington, Brooklyn, New York City. And rounding out the fifth position here in this four-way tie, Lower Hutt in the Wellington area in New Zealand. Thank you so much for listening. I gave a little special shout out to New Zealand because the numbers are a little up. And this is the first time any town in New Zealand has made the top five. So Lower Hutt, thank you. That is awesome. Thank you for listening. And please keep it up. Number four, there is a three-way tie. Waynesboro, Virginia. St. Paul, Minnesota. And Tigard, Oregon, all constantly in the top five. So thank you all for listening. Number three, Winchester, Virginia, taking a dip to number three. Number two, Portland, Oregon. Big shakeup here. And number one, out of nowhere, never been in the top five. It's sketchily. The numbers are pretty high for Germantown, Maryland. Came out of nowhere. I mean, I don't even know if you've ever been in the top or ever listened ever. I really don't know. I've never noticed Germantown, Maryland on the map before in terms of listenership. But out of nowhere, running away with the number one spot. Thank you, Germantown. I hope it's legit. I hope the numbers are legit and it's not like that Lake Stevens bullshit where, you know, the town in Washington where there's a data center that's handing out fucking addresses or IP addresses. You know what I mean? If you didn't listen to me talk about that a few weeks ago, I apologize. But I believe Germantown, there's people listening. Real folks listening. So thank you, Germantown. Let's get into what I'm listening to. But real quick, let's get into what I was watching the last couple days. The last couple nights, I decided I'm going to get back into The Walking Dead because I stopped watching years ago and I never finished it. And I think I stopped somewhere in the fifth season or something. And I tried to pick it up where I think I left off. And I'm not going to spoil anything, but I just started the seventh season last night and holy shit, does that show ever get bleak? It is, something else. I mean, it's a depressing show and it's violent as hell. And But man, they really took it to a level that I have not seen in a television show before, where it's brutal and it's unapologetically brutal and depressing, I have to say. But I guess that's a realistic interpretation of a zombie apocalypse, you know? So, damn, I was getting a little oddly emotional watching a fucking zombie drama play itself out, especially last night. My God. You know what I'm talking about if you've seen the show. That show is fucking intense. I mean, like I said, I knew it was intense, but they really ramped it up there. So that's fresh on my brain. Like, I lost a little bit of sleep thinking about it too much. It affected me. I try to not read into it too much, get emotional about it, but Jesus Christ. Fucking insane. All right, what have I been listening to? This week, some interesting stuff. I would say nothing bad, all good, but I got to come out of the gate and say I've been listening to Miley Cyrus. Now, before you judge me too much, I got sent a video of her performing in a Tiny Desk concert on NPR from my friend Grace, and I know Miley Cyrus to have a really awesome voice, and every time I hear her do a cover song or something, it's like she is very talented, and I was always intrigued by her talent. And I know she's, you know, got that wild child fucking shit going on and everything. And her new record, Plastic Hearts, or her last record, however many months ago it came out, I thought it was going to be like a rock and roll record or something. And I was thinking, man, her vocals, her like smoky, raspy vocals might actually lend itself to that sound. I should check that record out. And I cut it on, and it wasn't exactly what I was expecting. And I wasn't too stoked on it, but there are some good songs on it. And I have to admit, there's some really well-written songs and good performances on it. But like some of my heroes and your heroes totally vouch for her. I mean, she did the fucking rock and roll induction speech, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction speech for Joan Jett. And I got nothing but respect for Joan Jett and love Joan Jett. And she's on the record, and Billy Idol's on the record. And I think sometimes she sounds like Stevie Nicks, Miley does. And they do this fucking Fleetwood Mac mashup. Or not Fleetwood Mac, but a Stevie Nicks kind of mashup. And it makes too much sense. And I was thinking, all right, I'm a 40-year-old guy in my kitchen cooking dinner listening to fucking Miley Cyrus. This is where I'm at in my life. It's like lame dad stuff. But I was really getting introspective about her life and her voice and her songs. And I came to the conclusion that the album's half good. It's half shit and it's half pretty good. And, you know, some old rock and rollers do songs with her, I guess. So whatever. I'm not going to say it's a great record, but I've been listening to it. I've been listening to some songs. So that's my Miley Cyrus story. Other than that, I've been listening to Soft Kill. They're from Portland. And this is like my apology portion of the intro. I have to apologize to Soft Kill because I live in Portland and I've known about you for, I guess, better part of a decade here. And I never listened. I never cared to listen. I knew you were good. Everyone told me you were a good band. I would see your merch and I'm like, oh man, that's really good merch. And if you haven't seen Soft Kill merch, look it up. They make some really great stuff. They got really great designs. And so I have to apologize. I blew you off for too long. And then I checked out your last record that came out last year, Dead Kids Rip City. That's R.I.P. Rest in peace. But, you know, we all know Portland is known as Rip City. But, you know, the album title is an acronym, you know, like rest in peace. But, yeah, great record. It's fucking actually really good. It's really good. I've listened to it a couple of times in like 24 hours and it's dark. It's dark pop music, man. It's dark wave. It's fucking dark wave. You can say it's post-punk or goth rock or whatever the fuck, but it's just like really good kind of dark wave, dark pop to me. Just super insanely good songwriting, bordering on depressing and gorgeous. There's a fine line of inspirational and depressing. You know, it can go either way. And I know people who can't listen to music like Soft Kill because they're like, it's just so depressing. Why would you ever want to listen to it? But I find it inspirational. I find the melodies inspirational and everything's, it's gorgeous. It is depressing sounding, but it is beautiful fucking music. So yeah, check out Soft Kill if you haven't already. And another band that I have to apologize to is a band that I go way back with in terms of my fandom is Darkest Hour. They are a DC band, a Virginia band, DC area band. And, you know, we're about the same age. I think they're all around the 40-year mark like I am, but I got to see them when I was a teenager when they were first starting out. They've been around for 25 years. I think they just had their 25-year anniversary. And, you know, I saw them probably in their second year of existence, second, third year when Mark of the Judas came out. I was going to their shows in College Park, Maryland and in Hagerstown, Maryland. And, you know, I got to see them in Albuquerque in 2002 or 2003 or whatever. And they were blowing everyone out of the water at the hardcore shows. They were just fucking the best band. They were beyond metal. They were super talented. I've always loved the vocals. I've always loved the metal edge that they've had. And then metalcore kicked in somewhere in the early mid-aught years. And it got oversaturated. And I kind of just gave up on Darkest Hour. Not that I hated their music or anything. I think I was just over that sound that they kind of helped innovate. And they were, but they were always better than, quote, like these metalcore bands. They weren't ever like a metalcore band in my brain. But I just stopped listening to them until like yesterday. and I checked out their last album, their last LP that they came out with, which is, you know, 2-3 years old at this point, Godless Prophets and the Migrant Flora. And I was listening to it and they're still, they've evolved very, they just evolved into great songwriters and like Guitar Hero status. I know their lead guitar player has his own signature guitar now, and they got these guitar solos that are just blazing, but it all fits. It's like really mature, awesome, great, brutal, heavy metal fucking songwriting. And the vocals are still the great, same great vocals that I know and love. And so I have to apologize, Darkest Hour. I haven't listened to you in earnest since probably 2003, something like that. When Hidden Hands of a Sadist Nation came out, I think that's the last album I bought. So I apologize to you for blowing you off. I just gave up. I didn't think you were ever bad. I just stopped listening. And I should have paid attention. I should have paid attention because you've been killing it this whole time, apparently. So, yeah, listen to Darkest Hour, everybody. They're still doing it. They're still going strong. And they're still really fucking good. The last band that I've been listening to is a band from Minsk. They're a Belarus band. I don't even know how you, where are they, Belarusian? I don't know how you fucking say that, but they're from Belarus. They're called Molchat Doma. And they are straight up synthwave. I mean, there's no two ways about it. It's like amazing 80s sounding kind of dark synth wave music, and it's all sang in their language, sung in their language, whatever. They're on Sacred Bones. I've been talking a lot about Sacred Bones Records. They put out nothing but great stuff, and Molchat Doma is no exception. I've been listening to their newest album, Monuments, but they've got a few albums out before that one that are equally as good. I've been trying to go through their whole catalog, but yeah, really good synthwave from Belarus. Dark. I would say it's dark. It's got heavy vibes, you know, but it's danceable. Danceable, heavy vibes. So that's what I've been listening to. And that's what I have to apologize for. I really feel like I had to lay my emotions out on the table, you know, because I've been saying, don't give up on your heroes and everyone, you know, like keep listening to people that have been around for decades because they get better sometimes. And it's not all about nostalgia. These people evolve and they keep making great records. And I took my own advice, and Darkest Hour, definitely still making great records. Softkill, been around for about a decade, and their last record is, I haven't even gotten into their first record, but I listened to their two records before this one, and they're both really great as well. But this new record it's like, I feel like it's better. It's like they're getting better. Bands get better with time sometimes, you know? Anyway, keep making music, people. Just keep doing it. No matter what anyone says, including people like me. That's it. Let's get into this episode tonight. Kind of another disclaimer, like I did last week. This episode's pretty depressing. It's about the Hotel Cecil in Los Angeles, California, which has a reputation for death of any variety. A lot of people take their own lives there or have taken their own lives there. There's been some kind of murder. I'm not going to say straight up murder in the building, but murderers have lived there. There's been a possible murder that has occurred within the confines of the building, definitely around the building. The place just has a really bleak history. And that's what this episode is about tonight. So if you don't want to hear about death, basically, for the next hour and a half-ish to 2 hours, I hate to say it, but maybe skip out on it. We keep it light. I always try to keep it light. And of course we laugh and we're making jokes and we're trying to, like, you know, laugh our way through the painful reality of the situation. But in no way are we making fun of the subject of death in any way. There's no, you know, that's not what this show is about. But hey, there's a lot of puns, there's a lot of jokes, there's a lot of laughter, but at the end of the day, this is some terrible shit that happened at the Hotel Cecil throughout the last century, basically. So my guest is Stuntman Mike from the Post Rhetoric podcast, a good old friend of mine. And yeah, let's just get into it. Here we are, Stuntman Mike and myself, getting into Hotel Cecil.
Jason.
Mike.
Hey, what's up, man?
Not much, man.
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. Sounds great.
All right.
Yeah, man. Got the legend in the studio today, Stuntman Mike.
Yes, sir. You can say my real name if you want.
What are you talking about? It's Stuntman Mike.
Well, you're right. You're right. But it's an honor to be here, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, well, thanks for being here. Everyone that's listening has to know you from your show that you have with JPX. It's a podcast about a podcast, and that podcast is
Lost Rhetoric. But our podcast is called Post Rhetoric.
That'd be cool if it was pronounced post. You should tell everyone it's Post Rhetoric.
Well, you know, it might evolve into that.
Why not?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But for those who don't know what post rhetoric is, it's two of my oldest friends, JPX and Stuntman Mike, decided to start kind of an after show for Lost Rhetoric. Kind of like the Walking Dead or the Talking Dead to the Walking Dead. And right. The funny thing is I listen to every episode, but you guys talk about this show for about like a minute or two. And then the rest is just hilarious bullshitting, and I love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. We just get on there and, like I said, just bullshit. I think we did miss an episode with, I think it was the one with Grim Deeds. But so we'll probably have to catch up on that one on the next episode.
Yeah, you guys got to make up for that one. But yeah, to anyone listening out there, if you want to listen to a scathing, sometimes hilarious assessment of my performance on the show, post rhetoric usually comes out a few days after my episodes air. So yeah, you can find post rhetoric wherever you can find Lost Rhetoric, I believe. And you can listen to Stuntman Mike and JPX every episode do their top five things Jason could do better on the show.
I don't think we've come up with one yet, man.
Oh, don't spoil it. Don't spoil it.
You're doing a good job.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Well, I have quality guests.
You know what I mean? That's true. Hey, I can't dispute that.
The proof. You are part of the proof. So tonight, we're going to be talking about a very hot issue, apparently, we've discovered. This is a trending issue, and I didn't know, you didn't know, but you brought this up to me. It's the Cecil Hotel, the Hotel Cecil, Hotel Death, also known as the Suicide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very hot right now. I was just telling you yesterday, I discovered... as it were, that on the new Discovery Plus channel / streaming app, there's just earlier this month, a 2-hour Ghost Adventures special aired.
Right. Yeah. I think I saw that too. I mean, you told me about it, but
I didn't watch it because I don't have Discovery Plus, but I read about it. And I guess it's one of those things where a paranormal investigative team goes into the hotel and they claim it's for the first and last time ever a camera crew and a paranormal investigative team has been allowed in to the property to do an investigation. And I didn't get to watch it. I don't know what happens, but they retrace the steps of the most famous disappearance, maybe murder, maybe suicide, of Elisa Lam, which we'll get into, but they bring in some psychic mediums to help investigate. And yeah, they get deep into it. And apparently there's some like physical afflictions that happen to the crew members, like unexplained scratches and frightening and compelling audio and visual evidence that they capture, apparently. So
that's kind of creepy. Yeah, right? I checked to see if I had that Discovery Plus, but I don't have it either. So
no, it's new. It's like I have basic cable and I have the Discovery Channel. And with my Roku, I have the Discovery Go app, which, you know, you can get all of the Discovery shows on demand. But Discovery Plus is like, it's like Disney Plus. It's like their Netflix. It's their paid subscription service, and they're having exclusive content that you can only get with Discovery Plus. And this show is, I guess, one of the first that they
have. Yeah, it's a good topic to pick for one of the first ones.
Yeah, but that just came out, I think, first week of the year. And like I said, we didn't know that going into this.
Right. Yeah, I think, how long we've been talking about this? For maybe, two months or something?
Yeah, you brought this up to me a while ago, and just like most topics, well, not most, but a lot of the topics that my guests bring up, I didn't know shit about it, but you did. So what draws you to this topic, the Cecil Hotel?
Well, you know, the first I heard about it, I was watching some American Horror Story.
Right.
It was like season 5, I believe, It's called actually called Hotel.
Right.
And I did some back. I mean, I was just digging around on it and found out that they got the inspiration for the season based on the Cecil Hotel. And so, you know, I looked into the Cecil Hotel. I was just curious. And I was like, damn, man. Once I looked into it, I looked up, you know, looked it up on Wikipedia. And I was like, damn, this is crazy, man. You know, just all the stuff that's going on in there.
Yeah. No, it's funny. Because you brought it up to me. And I'm like, okay, haunted hotel. There's plenty of those. I wonder what's so special about this one. And of course, looking into it, it's not haunted in the traditional sense. There's no ghost sightings that I've read about. There's no weird, honestly, paranormal activity. Even from the people who have died there, what is haunted about it? It's like the vibe of the place.
Yeah, it just seems like an evil place.
It's cursed, man. That's the word for it. It's fucking cursed.
Right. I was about to say that too. But yeah, it seems like it's cursed or something. And that Elisa Lamb, you know, the video. We'll probably get into that later. But
yeah,
after seeing that, that's a creepy video too.
Yeah, it is super creepy, man. I mean, what I'd like to do is kind of go chronologically through the history of the perpetual fucking violence that has just persisted since the hotel opened. Well, not like maybe about a decade after it opened, because it was built in 1924, and then basically the suicides. It kind of started out with a lot of suicides in the 30s.
Right.
It progressed from there.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have to, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's up to you, but we don't have to cover every single death in the place, but.
Oh, I kind of want to, Mike. I kind of want to, I at least want to mention them because, you know, it's honestly for damn near 100 years at this point.
I know. I was thinking about that too. I mean, I think I counted it earlier. I think it was like 16 to 18 deaths, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like it's under 20. I mean, I think they're all worth mentioning. They're not deep, man. I mean, it's just this person did this, and what, you know what I mean. And that's basically it. There's only a couple stories that actually have some weirdness to them, or like some strange cryptic history to them. You know,
and yeah,
we'll find out the hotel is not only home to these violent acts, it's actually like adjacent to other violent acts that happened outside of the hotel, but the hotel is involved in the story.
Yeah, there's other stuff that ties into it.
Yeah,
into the actual hotel, like the location.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's located near Skid Row. I didn't even know that was an actual, what do they call it? Like a community or neighborhood of LA. I thought that was just, I mean, it's a term too, but it's an actual neighborhood of LA. I didn't know that was the official name of it.
Yeah, man.
But,
it's like that Little Shop of Horrors song, you know?
Oh, I don't know which one I've never heard.
Skid Row song in the movie, you know?
I haven't seen that forever.
I just imagine that's what it's like, Skid Row in LA. It's just a fucking musical.
I mean, that's a positive way to look at it. But yeah, I mean, I guess there's not too many people hanging around there that are, you know, doing well if you're homeless. Yeah. So it's definitely probably not going to be the best place for good stuff to happen, you know.
No, but when it was built, because it was built in 1924 by a hotelier, I think that's how you say it, hotelier.
Yeah, I don't know how you say that either.
William Banks Hanner. It could be Hanner. I don't know. But it was supposed to be this extravagant, and it was. It's a nice place. It was built like to the fucking nines, you know. It was supposed to be, they say, a destination hotel for international businessmen and social elites, and it cost $1 million in the 20s, and it had 700 rooms, and it had a marble lobby, stained glass windows, fucking palm trees, had this massive amazing staircase, and it was top of the line. It was whatever, you know.
Right.
A nice place to stay. It's like if you were a person of any prestige, this is where you wanted to stay. But seriously, 2 years after it opened, I mean, we're talking about the 20s here. It was built in 24. The Great Depression hit.
Mm-hmm.
So it says just 2 years after it opened, it was.
Yeah. It's just
what you were saying, Skid Row, all around the building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just horrible timing.
Yeah. And it hasn't honestly recovered. It seems like it had maybe 2 years of that decadent dream of what it was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then boom, shit show.
Right. I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah. So yeah, like you were saying earlier, man, fucking Skid Row, obviously. I mean, we all kind of got a sense of what Skid Row is. Homeless folks, junkies, runaways, criminals, all just scouring the streets, doing sketchy shit, trying to survive in very, very hard times. A lot of desperation going on. But at the time, a lot of depression, because it's the Great Depression.
Right, absolutely.
The collective dolor, as it were, is astronomical. Just everyone's just grieving, personal grieving, collective grieving. The country is just fucked. So with that being the background, in the 30s, motherfuckers started offing themselves, you know.
Yeah, they were just like, F it, I'm out of this place.
where's the best place to do this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I think, you know, not even that far away from Skid Row. So they're like, you know, checking into a nice hotel for the night. They're like, man, this is going to be, you know, if I'm going to go out, I'm just going to enjoy my last night on earth, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they were thinking.
I wonder if it in the 30s, especially just, you know, in the throes of the Depression, it's a really nice hotel, but I wonder if it was super cheap because they had to make it cheap so they could have business. You know, like, so just imagine getting this really nice room for nothing, you know?
Yeah.
That'd be a very decadent way to go.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. One, I mean, I don't know. I don't know about you, but I always enjoy staying in hotels, you know?
Me too. Oh man, I love it.
Cause like usually when you're in a hotel, you're on vacation. So you're already in a good mood. Plus, you know, You have room service and maids that just clean up after you. I mean, it's like a dream come true almost.
Yeah, I mean, it's a paid vacation. Well, you pay for it, but paid for a vacation. But that's I mean, I've never really stayed at a super super nice hotel with what I stay at, like basic hotels, motels usually. But even that escape is nice, you know.
Yeah. I was never one for like a really super nice hotel. I think I stayed in the George Washington Hotel, the one in Winchester.
Oh man, isn't that that's haunted? That's got some history.
Probably. But they like renovated it, and I think it was too nice. Like, I don't know, it was too fancy for me.
it weirded you out.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was just they had, I don't know. I don't know. They just had like the old school kind of decorations, and maybe it just wasn't modern. I don't know.
Well, but I imagine that's what this place is like, obviously built in 1924.
Right.
Very decadent, very of the era, very nice. And nowadays, I mean, the story is different now, but as time goes on, it gets more and more, I guess, nostalgic. And I mean, it also gets creepier. Mm-hmm. I mean, my wife and I were just watching a movie a night or two ago that took place in the 20s, and I was like, man, And I know it's the way it's shot and the way it's intentional, but everything always just looks, it does look so depressing. Like all the decor, all the, like the architecture, all the artwork, all the people are, it's like everything's so drab and it just seems so depressing because it was depression. But anyway, I just imagine nowadays, like if you stayed in the Cecil, if they kind of left it the way it was when it was built, it might be a little depressing. I don't fucking know. I've never been.
I want to stay there, man.
Well, because you might get your chance.
I think they changed the name to stay on Main. I guess to get away from the dark past of it, but you
that
know.
Closed. Yeah.
Did they change the name back?
Yeah. Let's just jump to that real quick before we get into all the bad shit. The state of the place today is actually really weird. I mean, I couldn't find definitively what the fuck is going on with this place because it changed hands a lot in the last decade. In 2011, it became Stay on Main, as you mentioned. And then in 2014, it was sold to a New York guy. And then in 2015, it was like another guy. Mm-hmm. And then, whatever, it Stay on Main is closed. It closed apparently in 2017 at some time, but in 2017 the building itself is designated a Los Angeles historical landmark, so it's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. But the last that I read is it actually is kind of in renovation and under construction, and this construction is supposed to be done by October of this year, and it's a lot of single room occupancy. It's going to be operated by Skid Row Housing Trust, and it's supposed to be like low income, where the tenants are, they're aiming for tenants to be making about 30% and between 30% and 60% of the area median income. And there's also the higher end, like 141 units are going to be for people making more than that.
So is it going to be like hotels or hotel rooms or just condos?
Well, it seems like apartments. I think I said that backwards. They're aiming 141 units are going to be for people making 30%
right
of the median income or less. And that's 141 of like 300, almost 300 units or something. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of low income housing. Single rooms, you know what I mean? But I can't fucking tell. There are these rumors, like this woman said, I've seen construction workers in and out, and I've seen signs for rooms for rent for $900. And I'm like, why is this so hard to confirm? If this place is under construction, there's a massive paper trail. If you live in the neighborhood, you should be able to see that this building is under renovation. But I'm reading these LA papers, even from this year, and they're like, we still kind of don't really know what's going on with this place. It's closed. Some people still live there. They're like, nine folks live there. But as the renovation begins, they're going to be relocated for the duration of the construction, and they'll be allowed to return. And I'm assuming they're the low-income tenants, which is very nice of them to take care of them that way. But it's like, why is it so hard to just prove that this place is under renovation and going to open soon?
Right.
Again.
It's just like a clusterfuck or whatever. But I think I tried to book a room there like a year ago.
Dude, like I just tried to
through get orbits.
Online and I tried to get online and book a room there too. What was your experience?
I think they said it was available, but once I got into the site or whatever in orbits or whatever, I couldn't find it. So
yeah, My experience was I tried to punch in a bunch of dates throughout the year of this year.
And right.
You know, there's a whole page, there's a Stay at Main page, there's a Cecil Hotel page, and every date I punched in, it's sorry, rooms are unavailable. So
yeah, I ended up in the same place. I could not book a room, but
hey, by the end of this year, it seems like, I don't know, it seems like there's going to be residents and kind of like hotel style pay by night kind of thing going on with the building.
Yeah.
Which I think has kind of always been, I mean, you can live there, you know, you can have a long-term stay, you can stay just a night, shit like that.
Yeah, I would love to stay there. I mean, I don't know if it'd be worth it, you know, to go out all the way out to LA just to stay in the hotel.
Well, there's plenty of other shit to do out
there. Yeah, I mean, it's LA, I guess. But but shoot, man, you know, I was telling you when before the Grim Deeds episode, you asked me if I had any like paranormal sites in Winchester, and I told you no, man. Like, I've never seen anything, and I kind of want to see a ghost or something, man, you know, something crazy.
Well, that's the thing, like I was saying about the Cecil, it doesn't seem like there's ghosts.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've heard maybe like a couple maybe one story where they saw a ghost, but yeah, that's not notorious for seeing ghosts, just mainly the deaths and suicides and everything.
It would make sense that there would be ghosts, because let's get into it, because the first suicide that happened at the Cecil Hotel, and it's interchangeable, man. Hotel Cecil, Cecil Hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
People call it either one. I kind of like Hotel Cecil.
Wikipedia says Cecil Hotel.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but yeah,
Wikipedia,
well, actually
knows all.
It says Stale Main, formerly Cecil Hotel, Hotel Cecil. So yeah, informally the Cecil. So I guess it doesn't matter, but anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I mean, the building itself says Hotel Cecil.
That's true. That's a good point. So I guess that should be the official name.
When it all comes down to it, believe the building, you know?
Yeah. Look at the sign on the side of the building.
The side of it, the front of it. Yeah. It's, yeah, there's a couple signs.
Yeah. Hotel Cecil. That's probably the official name, but.
So yeah, the first suicide was in November 19th, 1931. W.K. Norton found in his room by the hotel staff, and he'd been dead for a few hours, and he poisoned himself. That's
right.
That's what happened. That's and that just really kicked things off there in 1931, which is 7 years after it opened. So first suicide, 1931. Then, like a year later, a little less than a year later, September 32, Benjamin Dodich, who's 25, shot himself in the head, did not leave a suicide note, another suicide. And 1934, Army Sergeant Lewis Borden slashed his throat with a razor. And this is a trend that we're going to see. There's actually a lot of military death.
I did see a few of them.
And it's a lot of suicide.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw probably, I'm actually looking at the list right now. And yeah, I see like two or three just looking at the whole page or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it being Los Angeles, there's a lot of military facilities in the area. And a lot of people are, I'm sure, especially if you're in the Navy, you're there on leave for a little bit, or you got some, whatever you fucking call it, shore time. I don't really know. You got some time to kill. That sounds terrible to say right now.
That's a pun right there.
Yeah. It's kind of a morbid pun.
Yeah, man. Like, sorry I had to pick such a morbid like topic for your podcast, man.
No, it's
not. I just think it's, some of it's just creepy and interesting. I mean, not the deaths and suicides, but I don't know. I just kind of interests me, just like the hotel itself.
It is interesting because, like I said, you really do have to wonder if a place is cursed.
Yep.
Or if it, like, just imagine if it's popular, it's trendy, it's trending to commit suicide there. Like, oh, if the word on the street is go to the fucking Cecil. And I just imagine if that's what happened, like a trendy place to kill yourself or kill someone else. You know, and like people actually make the decision based on the location because it's known for it. Like, that's weird as fuck to me.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's what I was just thinking too. Like, you know, if the news reports it, then it gets in people's heads and they're like, well, shoot, you know, maybe like with serial killers, what's it called? Like a copycat killer.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, I don't know, with the school shootings or whatever, it's just the news reports it and then people think of it and they're like, hey, you know, I can do that too, or whatever they think. I don't know.
It's very strange. I mean, just think, I mean, with the, I mean, when it comes to suicide as well, I mean, there's famous bridges, there's famous forests, there's like,
yeah
like I hate to say it, but it's like trendy places to go, and it seems like the Cecil might have got, I mean, they called it the suicide in the 60s after 30 years of
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's depressing,
right? Yeah, I mean, shoot, I guess, I don't know, it's definitely weird.
It is weird, but it's, I mean, let's continue, because it just keeps happening, you know, and then it gets even weirder, you know, as time mm-hmm. goes on. But in 1937, people don't know if this was a suicide or not, but this is also a trend aside from the military. People like to jump out of windows. In this yeah. building in particular, there's a lot of this.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, you know, especially if you're high up, that's guaranteed that you're going to die if you jump out of a window.
Yeah, absolutely. And this lady in 1937, 25-year-old Grace Magro, they don't know if she fell or she jumped from a ninth-story window, but she got caught up in telephone wires on her way down. And they ended up wrapping around her. So she had telephone wires wrapped around her when she hit the ground. Yeah. But anyway, there is a military tie, because her companion was a fella named M.W. Madison, who was a sailor on the USS Virginia. And he was asleep in the room at the time. But he didn't have any information of how she got to where she got. And, you know, he wasn't charged with anything.
Right.
But she didn't die on impact, because, I guess she got caught up in the wires. But she got transported to the hospital, where she later died. But, yeah, she's the first jumper at the hotel in what seems like kind of a long line of people who jumped from that place, which is, again, like another, like I said about the bridges, it's like, is it known? Do people go there specifically eventually to just, like, if you're going to do it at the Cecil or something? That's just creepy.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, people, like I said, you know, like copycats, they're like, well, mm-hmm. you know, I want to kill myself too. So everybody's doing it here. Let me just go to this place and do it.
Right.
But I've heard, like, people, I think that jump off bridges and stuff, some people live.
Oh yeah. Like, well, this lady lived for a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, like, some people like live and recover, but I've heard, like, most of, like, I think everybody says the first thought they have after they jump off is, you know, I wish I wouldn't, or I regret it, you know? So
yeah.
Suicide is not, should not be promoted.
No, hell no. And that, and no, fucking way are we promoting that on this show. We're just telling the story.
Right.
It's because it's this place, like we said, cursed. I'm telling you,
it's cursed. It's
fucking cursed. So another death that happened in 1937, it's another military person. It's a marine mm-hmm. Corps fireman. His name was Roy Thompson. He jumped from his room and he landed on the skylight of the building next door. I don't know if that's like a fucking running jump or, I mean, I'm not trying to make light of it.
Yeah, I don't mean to laugh, but
seriously, like, that's, yeah, skylight of the building next door. That's something else.
Yeah, people are trying to, at this point, people are trying to set records of, you know, who can jump the furthest.
You're fucking trying to one up each other.
Right.
Well, like what you're saying, if this theory of trending is like, you got to push the envelope, you know?
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah, no, it's hard to tell, man. It's just, yeah, it's just mysterious. And like I said, it's cursed, man.
It is. So in 39, another military person, Navy officer Erwin Neblett, who was 39 in 1939, he ingested poison, another poisoning, self-poisoning. And then in 1940, a teacher named Dorothy Seeger. I've seen Seeger in like Skiger with a C. I've seen them both. I don't know if it's Skiger or Seeger. Anyway, she also poisoned herself. And yep. Yeah, I think
she was one of the ones. Yeah, I think she died at the hospital, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah, she was like she poisoned herself to near death in the hotel.
Yeah, I'm just looking through the,
and then
I printed off the Wikipedia list, but yeah, I mean, honestly, if that's the place you're going to kill yourself, like I said, not to promote it, but a hotel is probably the best place to do it because,
privacy,
you know, well, I mean, just, yeah, you don't leave a huge mess behind. I mean, well, plus, you know, like I said, the hotel maids will have to clean it up.
Well, I mean, if you're jumping from a 9-story bill or the 9th floor,
or if you jump off, yeah.
I can't even imagine. But dude, it gets even worse. It gets even creepier. This is the worst. I'm sure you read about Dorothy Purcell or Purcell, in 1944.
Oh man, yeah, this one's terrible,
dude. You want to tell it?
I mean, I don't know. I was probably hoping. We could skip over. I didn't know you wanted to go through every single one, but.
Oh, man. I mean, well.
Oh, man. I mean, I don't know. I think we should probably skip this one. It's kind of.
Oh, I'm not skipping over it. This is fucked up. This is the worst one. This is. Well, it's not like you can rank them, but this is pretty.
Right, right.
Pretty.
I would say this is probably the worst one.
But this is like psychotic. I mean, the circumstances are just very strange. So in 1944, a 19-year-old woman, Dorothy Purcell, she woke up in the middle of the night with crazy stomach pains, and she was there with Ben Levine, who's 38, who I guess is her fucking boyfriend or something. So she went to the bathroom, and they say in this article, to her complete shock, she gave birth to a baby boy. Like, she had no idea she was pregnant. And
I've heard of people that's happened to.
But I've heard of it too.
But
very interesting.
Know. I can't. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a woman, so I don't know. But I would think that you would know you're pregnant, especially if you don't get your period for
9 months.
You know, 8 or 9 months, you know.
I mean, there's definitely signs of it, but you know, I mean, woman's menstrual cycle is the same. Some
that's true.
It's not a monthly thing for everyone, and everyone's pregnancy is different, and you just never know the circumstances.
Yeah, so anything's possible.
Yeah, so she could have obviously. I mean, she didn't know. She said she didn't know, had no idea, just gave birth in the bathroom, and she thought the baby was born dead. So what does she do?
She threw it out the window. I mean,
baby out of the fucking window.
That's
onto
crazy,
the
man.
Roof of the building next door. And she went to trial, of course, because believe it or not, the baby wasn't dead.
Yeah, that's super crazy, man. I was like, I didn't even know if we would talk about this one, but.
Oh, yeah.
I guess we just got to go all the way, I guess.
Yeah, man. I mean, this is what it's all about. This is the creepiness of this fucking place. But she was found not guilty of murder by reason of insanity.
Mm-hmm.
So she went to the hospital for psychiatric treatment. And I tried to look her up to see what happened to her, and I couldn't really find anything. I didn't get like too crazy about it, but. I was really curious about what the hell happened to this lady, but I mean, you can only imagine what's going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I don't mean to laugh, man. Sometimes I just like laugh to
laughter.
I don't know how else to like react to it. You know,
I know all about uncomfortable laughter. You don't have to explain yeah. it to me, but yes, I laugh. I laugh at shit I should not laugh at all the time because it's fucked up. And you know, this shit's, we're so far removed from this that we could.
Yeah. I mean,
this happened in the 40s, whatever. It's like not even real, you know, but
yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's a person we don't even know, but. I don't know. That's definitely probably the most effed up one of them all. Yeah. You know, but
yeah. Yep. Yep. So that happened. And then 1947, Robert Smith, not obviously the singer from The Cure. That would be super tragic.
I didn't know that was his name.
Bob Smith, man. I think he's married to Mary Smith, the most complex depressed songwriter possibly of all times, Bob Smith, and he's married to Mary. Most common ass names.
Yeah, that's true. But I like that band though.
Oh yeah,
they're pretty good.
They're one of the best ever. But Robert Smith from 1947, he was 35 years old. He jumped from the 7th floor and same shit, man, jumped from the fucking building.
But if you think about it again, like a hotel is a easy place to commit suicide. I mean, because you can just jump, you know, from the freaking 14th floor or whatever, and you know, you're just gone. But
yeah,
it's definitely a lot of suicides, deaths.
Well, at this point, the people who work there are used to it. They know there's probably like protocol for dealing with the situation at this fucking point.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure we'll get into the Netflix documentary coming up
that's
later
coming.
On.
That's coming. So yeah, 1954, a woman named Helly Gurney jumped from the window on the 7th floor. Same story, literally the same story in a couple ways. But she ended up on the hotel's marquee.
Yeah.
So that's pretty dramatic.
Yeah. I mean, these are people. Yeah. I mean, at this point, it's just copycat suicides, pretty much, you know.
Well, could be. It's just, but I mean, talk about a Hollywood ending. Fucking jumping off and landing on the marquee, man.
Yeah. Everybody can see you then. You make, you know, definitely make the news at that point.
Absolutely. So. Year, I mean, at this point, it's like once every decade, right? So you went from the 40s, there was a jumper, 50s, there was a suicide jumper, and then in the 60s, 1962, Julia Frances Moore, who was 50 years old, jumped from the 8th floor, and she landed in a second story interior light well. You know, so we've had people land on the marquee, land on the interior second story light well, someone landed on the building next door on the skylight. It's just
projectile, just crazy shit.
Bodies flying everywhere out of this place, man.
Yeah, dude. I think the next one was one that I thought was pretty, you know, interesting, or so to speak.
Oh yeah,
Pauline Otten.
Yeah. Tell that one, because this one's like, yeah, fucked up.
Yeah, I mean, this is one that I like put a star next to talk about. But October 12th, 1962, Pauline Otten, 27, jumped from the window of her 9th floor room. She had an argument with her estranged husband, Dewey, and then he left the room, and then. She jumped to kill herself, and she actually landed on somebody on the street, a pedestrian, George Giannini. I don't know. I guess.
Yeah. It's like,
that's how you pronounce it.
Giannini.
Or Giannini. Yeah. Probably how you pronounce it. 65.
Mm-hmm.
And she killed herself, and then landed on him, obviously, and killed him too.
Yeah, man.
That's just.
Talk about bad luck for poor old George, man. I mean, that's like walking down the street and, you know, seriously, like a air conditioner falling on your fucking head or something, you know?
It's yeah, just, or like
a person.
Or a person. That's just, oh, man.
literally fallen from the sky. Just, and the thing is, he had his fucking hands in his pockets.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
They couldn't tell. They couldn't tell if it was like a, they both jumped together.
Right.
But then they later found out he had his hand in his pockets and he was wearing shoes. So they determined that if he would have jumped, his hands wouldn't have been in his pockets.
Right. And his fucking shoes would have flown, either fallen off or popped off when he hit the ground, you know?
Right. Or maybe, I mean, I guess that's, but shoot, maybe he did jump with his hands in his pockets, but
man,
I don't know.
That's confidence. If you jump, if you jump nine stories up, keep your hands in your pockets the whole time.
That's, yeah. I mean, that's straight up just, you're just ready to go. And
that's, yeah, that's
straight like up mellow.
That's elite level of, you know what the fuck you want to do.
Yeah. That's a guy that's committed suicide in previous lives, like he's, many times
experience, but, it seems pretty obvious he was just a poor sap walking on the street,
right.
And this lady just landed on him. Very unfortunate on many levels.
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of the ones I felt was worthy of mentioning, but
for sure. It's fucked up, man. It's fucking gross.
Fucked and up. It's effed up, man.
Just walking down the street. So yeah, at this point, they're starting to call the Cecil is just dubbed the most haunted hotel in Los Angeles. So much has happened by the late 60s and early 70s. It's got a very morbid reputation.
Right.
But it doesn't end, you know, it keeps going. December 20th, 1975, a still unidentified woman about 23 years old, jumped from the 12th floor. And she also, like the previous person, landed on the second floor roof. They don't really know anything about her, except she checked in on December 16th under the name Allison Lowell, L-O-W-E-L-L. And she was staying in room 327. And then after that, man, and this is not a pun, it kind of dies down. I mean, I guess it is a pun. But
pun, yeah.
It dies down. The next thing that happens that I could find was September 1st, 1992. A guy was found dead in the alley behind the Cecil. So the suicides have stopped. There really hasn't been like a actual, like a murder. It's kind of like all suicides except for the poor baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no proven murders. These are all like people willingly jumping out of windows, not pushed and not poisoned. That's no one's been arrested at all for anything. It's all basically been like ruled suicides. But in 1992, there's a dead guy in the alley and they think that he either fell or jumped or was pushed from the hotel's 15th floor.
Right.
So don't know. And they've never even established this guy's true identity because I guess he's so mangled. I don't really know. Or he must not have dental records. I really don't know. They just know his size and what he was wearing, basically. And his age was early 20s.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like some of these homeless people, they just, you know, fall off the face of the earth. I mean, not to be another pun. That's
another pun, bud.
But yeah, I mean, they just, you know, get erased from existence when you become that low.
Right.
I mean, life, you know.
Yeah, very possible. And I'm sure you don't need a valid ID to check into this place. at all.
Oh yeah, definitely
not. I'm sure at no point, probably even up until it closed in 2017, did you need, you probably didn't need a credit card or a valid ID. You probably just write any name
if you're paying cash.
Yeah,
write any name you want. If you got cash, bank cash.
That's right.
You got a room.
Yeah, man. But that leads us to, I mean, almost 20 years go by. 21 years go by with really nothing happening at the Cecil. So I guess its heyday, in a sense, was like the 30s through the 60s. There was a lot of action, a lot of negative happenings at the Cecil. And then in the 70s, 80s, 90s, there were one a decade, basically, you know?
Right.
So it kind of started petering out here, thankfully. Jesus, I mean, how much more do you need?
Yeah, man.
Just fucking
too many deaths.
Yeah, absolutely. But in 2013, the most famous and the most well-known occurrence happened, or the most famous incident happened, and that was the Elisa Lam,
right?
Which we were talking about. There is a Netflix documentary that we did not know about until we started looking into this that is coming out on February 10th. You're welcome, Netflix, for the free publicity and Discovery Plus.
Yeah, man, that's like we're doing, you know, advertisements for American Horror Story, Discovery Plus, and Netflix. Yeah,
no one would watch unless we said anything about it, Mike.
Or promoting, you know.
Yeah, no one would watch. So you're welcome, Netflix.
Yeah, it's all your, you know, millions and millions of listeners. That's right. From Lost Rhetoric.
That's right. So yeah, on February 10th, the trailer's already out. You can find it on YouTube. It's called Crime Scene: The Vanishing at the Cecil Hotel. See, they call it the Cecil Hotel too. Instead of Hotel Cecil. But yeah, this is the one that it went viral because there's a fucking video that is creepy and
oh my gosh, yeah.
Honestly, yeah, it's kind of chilling. So, yeah, what do you want to say about what happened or Elisa Lam? What do you got on Elisa Lam, man?
Yeah, man, you know, basically a 21-year-old Canadian student. She eventually, you know, she died there, obviously. It was on February 19, 2013. They found her naked body inside of the water supply tank on the hotel roof. And, you know, after she'd been missing for 3 weeks, you know, people were complaining about water pressure in the hotel and the water tasted funny.
Dude, all right, I got to stop you there. They drank the water.
Right.
Can you imagine that? Drinking the water that is filtering off of a dead body.
Yeah. I mean, thank God we have immune systems. It's still gross as hell.
That is fucking... I even read somewhere that there were complaints of the water being black.
Yeah, I heard that too. I didn't see it in Wikipedia, but I definitely heard, I heard that as well at some point.
Gross. That is
gross. That's
fuck.
That's definitely creepy, man.
It's so disgusting to think that you drank the water from a water tank housing a dead body. That's
Anyway,
I'm gonna move on from that. What else you got from the story after the complaints?
Yeah, they just said the water tasted funny and they found her, you know, and they ruled it her death as an accidental drowning.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there's that video footage of her in the elevator, which is super creepy because, you know, she's like in the elevator and it's on YouTube, so, you know, I'm sure a bunch of people will be, if nobody's seen it already, they can go look at or watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's like, it looks like she's hitting all the buttons on every single floor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the doors to the elevator aren't closing, which is kind of strange.
That is strange. Yeah. Because, we all have used elevators and every single elevator of every brand that I've ever been on, they are very forceful with the door closing. Yeah. And if you stick your arm in there and keep stopping it, it just eventually buzzes at you and forcefully shuts. You can't keep it open. But for some reason in this video, the doors don't even attempt to shut one time.
Yeah.
Very weird.
And I think I heard like another, cause I was like, I'm just so curious about her situation, especially because it's just mysterious. And I think I heard one source say she hit there's a button that supposedly keeps the elevator doors open.
Could be.
Like,
I mean,
if you hit it,
there's a door open button to keep, you know, if it tries to shut.
Yeah.
But
you push it like once.
It depends on the model, you know, and I'm sure this is an old elevator, but, I was thinking about that too. Maybe there is some sort of, or it could have been the emergency button or something that just like keeps it locked.
Yeah.
Where it is. I don't really know.
Yeah. Like the same source. I think they said like her eyesight wasn't as great. So she just was pushing every button to try and get back to her room or something. I don't know,
mm-hmm.
But you know, she jumps out of the elevator. She's looking in both directions, jumps back in. Looks like she's hiding from somebody.
Yeah, when she first gets in, it seems kind of normal. And she's like staring at the buttons, hits every button. Then she's kind of peeping around the corner, not looking too scared. But then she starts kind of hiding in the corners. Like she's
is
hiding. And then, she jumps out and starts looking both ways. And then she gets out and she starts moving her hands all weird. Like she might be
talking to
somebody or.
Yeah, it's like. She's moving her hands around like she's talking to a person or maybe a ghost.
At some point it almost looks like sign language. Like her hands are kind of moving in weird.
Yeah.
Formation.
It was reported that she was bipolar though too. I mean,
right.
But I mean, bipolar people, I don't know. They can still pretty much function, you know, but
yeah,
from what I understand, but
I read that according to her autopsy, she had only taken her prescribed stimulant medications, but neither of her stabilizers. So she was not on her full medication, and that could have led to a manic episode, which, you know, bipolar folks could have hallucinations or even psychosis. You know, she could have been in the throes of like a manic bipolar episode where, you know, she's just not herself and ends up where she ended up because she's fearful or just not, she's just not herself. She's just not medicated.
Yeah.
She's out of her mind.
But yeah, and that's another crazy thing. Like, how the hell does she end up on the top of the roof of the hotel?
Okay.
In the water tank?
Yeah, so let's go back to there. So she's on the elevator. She's in and out. She's hitting buttons. She's kind of hiding. She kind of looks like she's talking to somebody. And then she disappears down the hallway and out of sight. And in the video, the elevator doors close and open like two or three times eventually. And she doesn't come back. And there's people who say that there's like a minute missing and the time code is scrubbed from...
Yeah, I've heard that.
Video. There's talk of that. And then there's also talk of her mouth being pixelated when she's saying stuff and you can't see what she's saying. So people think that the security footage was actually manipulated to hide something.
I think I heard that too.
So there's that. There's quite a few conspiracies out there. But after she disappears in the video... she eventually gets found on the roof in a water tank that is not easily accessible at all and not easy to get into at all. right?
Right. Yeah, I probably should have ended up with that at the end, but like with her in the water tank. But yeah, I mean, that's probably one of the most mysterious things. Like, how the heck did she get up there? Because,
yeah,
you know, with all the people jumping off the roof, they had to have some sort of lock or alarm for the door to the roof.
Well, no one that I read jumped off the roof. Everyone jumped out of their room. Well, yeah. You know what I mean?
That's true. But, you know, with people jumping out the window, they're probably like, man, we got to lock the roof because people are just going to.
Yeah. I mean, every building has high security for their, for roof access. They don't just let people. Well, I mean, for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, like,
they really don't want you up there.
That's another thing. Like, how the hell did she get up there, man? She would have had to climb up the fire escape or something. I don't know.
Well, that's what they say because
some little 21-year-old, you know, 21-year-old student, you know, how the hell did she get up there, man?
Right. So, well, there is the theory that she was high as fuck on hallucinogenic drugs. So there is also that possibility. I mean, you mind over matter, Mike. You could be high as we've all done amazing things high as fuck, have we not? You've blown your own mind with what you can do high as fuck. So
well, yeah, I mean,
I would not put it past this little lady to achieve what she achieved high as shit.
Yeah. I can see that.
I mean, like I said,
not,
I don't mean to laugh.
Experience,
but if that were the if those were the circumstances, she did the impossible by herself, because it's very difficult to do this alone. Very difficult because these water tanks are on the roof. You can only get there through or with keys that the hotel staff, they're the only people who have them, of course.
Keys to the door, you mean?
Yeah, doors to the roof. They're obviously locked.
Right.
She could not get through that way. She could have used the fire escape, but there are trigger alarms that go off when you, I guess, reach a certain point. And the hotel staff said there were no alarms that went off. And the water tanks themselves are 10 feet tall.
Right. You got to climb up a ladder to get to it.
Right. And there were no ladders around. And she ended up inside in the lids. I mean, these
I thought there was ladders. I thought there was a ladder on the side, but I don't know.
I read this. This is exactly what I read. It says it required a ladder to reach, but there were none around the night Lamb ended up inside.
Okay.
That's just one source.
Okay. I mean, well, yeah, you did more research than me then.
But the lid to the tank, I don't know what it is. If it's just a
flat, seems heavy like ass it would be,
piece of metal.
Yeah. It seems like it would definitely be heavy to lift up, you know?
Yeah. Cause with the pictures I saw, it looked like there were, I think, four tanks up there, and these are, I don't know how wide they are, the circumference of them, but they're 10 feet high. I mean, they gotta be, I don't know, 6-8 feet fucking wide.
Yeah,
but
I was thinking like 10 feet, but yeah, close to that.
But there's no hinge on the lid. So you're not lifting it up and closing it. Apparently you have to like slide it or something. So,
yeah.
So, or just, you know, or just lift it. So people are confused because the lid was in place.
Yeah, I would think, you know, if it's a water tank that, you know, the water that people are drinking, it's got to be sealed, you know, or locked or something. Because, like, anybody could get up there and, you know, pour poison in it or something.
Or an animal could get in there and fucking die. Yeah.
Yeah, an animal or a human.
Yeah, human. Yeah, exactly. But I imagine it's a heavy metal plate
that's
up there. And if it's not on a hinge, it's secured some way. But either way, she got in the fucking tank and the lid was back in place like nothing had happened. So if she, obviously, if she slid it in any way to fit to get in, she once she's in the tank, she's not putting it back.
And apparently, like, she took her clothes off. I think her clothes were in the tank too. So she would have had to take her clothes off inside the tank. I don't know, man.
It's all weird.
It's just so mysterious, man. I just want to know what really happened, you know?
Well, that's where the murder theories come in, because how the fuck did this lady get into the tank? And it looks like the tank has not even been touched.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I've heard theories where, like, I think one of the hotel staff did something to her, and, you know, I don't know. And then she ended up putting her in there, I guess, after things went bad, but I don't know.
The hotel staff would make sense in the way that they have the keys, they have access.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If they're talking about alarms going off and the only way to get up there is with a key, that makes sense. But yeah, so
yeah, I think
that's what we're dealing with here, is a woman acting strange, disappeared, ended up in a water tank that she should not be able to access, and definitely should not be able to get in all by herself and leave the lid intact like it had never been touched. You know, so very strange circumstances.
Yeah, man, it's just, it makes you just wonder, man, and your imagination kicks in, and it's just like, you want answers, but I guess nobody will really ever have a solid answer to it.
And they haven't apparently solved anything. But in this article that I read, it says, and this is kind of a quinky dink stuntman, Mike, this is a coincidence. And I don't know if it's true or not. I only read it in this one article, but it was discovered apparently that a tuberculosis drug was being studied nearby the hotel when this all happened. And the name of the drug, I shit you not, was Lam-Elisa.
Damn, that's kind of...
spelled exactly the same.
So a tuberculosis drug was being studied. What the heck is she doing down there from Canada, you know?
Well, she was on vacation. I think she had just come up from San Diego and was just
living it up, I guess.
You know, doing stuff, checking stuff just out.
Getting it in, bud.
Getting it in, yeah.
But, yeah, that's kind of strange, too. That's not a joke, right?
No. No, that's something I really read.
Okay.
Yeah, that's... I mean, as deep as a conspiracy theory can go, they're testing this drug with her name on it, and she ends up dead. So,
yeah.
I mean, you, wherever the fuck you want to take that, take it. I don't, you know what I mean?
Right. Maybe she was the guinea pig.
She knew too much. She was on the drug. You know what I mean? Like, she, whatever.
Yeah, man. Your mind could just go crazy with so many different scenarios of what could happen, but
I'm sure the Netflix documentary will clear it all up. So everyone watch on February 10th and write Netflix and thank Lost Rhetoric for getting you hip to it, because you probably wouldn't have known about it otherwise.
Right.
But one thing I do want to get into about the Elisa Lam case is there's a theory out there about she may have been playing the Korean elevator game. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I saw it on Wikipedia or something. What do they call it? Yeah, the elevator game.
The elevator game.
I've never heard of it before, but
I think this is very interesting.
I haven't looked too much into it. I didn't get a chance to look into it, but...
Oh, I did. So
yeah, tell me more, man.
I'm not going to go into all the details, because honestly, if you want to play this game, look it up. I'm not going to give... because there are steps involved. And there's is very specific, but there are people out there who think that she may have been trying to play this game, and that the video, the surveillance video, proves it with the hitting of all the buttons and whatever. I mean, she may have been trying to play and fucking it up or something. But
I don't believe it. That's what I'm saying, man. I don't believe in all that stuff. I don't know. I'm the type that, like, I believe it when I see it. So, you know, maybe I'll try this game one time, but yeah, go ahead. Tell me about the elevator game.
All right. So like I said, there are a series of, it's like a 10 step fucking process. You get on it. The thing is, you have to get on an elevator, obviously, but you have to be alone. And there's a whole sequence of buttons and floors you have to hit. And it's a very specific sequence. And like I said, if you want to know what it is, just look up Korean elevator game and you'll find the fucking sequence. So
I was going to say, man, are you going to tell them how the game play or how to play the game?
No, I'm not going to.
Because like we could be responsible. You could be responsible for some deaths.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not going to give the whole fucking thing. If you, like I said, if you just like anything with the show, you know, you want to know more, look it up, because yeah, I'm not here.
You don't want to be liable for like some deaths if it is really real.
Yeah, well, this show is supposed to be informative, not definitive. So I just want to inform you of these things, not give you, I can't claim to have
not all, put any ideas in their people's heads.
And I definitely don't want to tell you every single detail on how to play a weird game that could have you end up in another dimension, because that is the point of this game, Mike. So if I've piqued your interest, anyway, there's a whole fucking series of buttons you got to hit. You got to go to this floor, this floor, this floor, this floor, and you got to be alone the whole time. And I think it's something like if someone gets on the elevator, you got to start all over. You have to be alone the whole time. So you eventually reach the fifth floor, and that's when people say they encounter a young woman who comes onto the elevator. And at no point are you to interact with this woman or look at her or talk to her, and she will try to interact, but you, it's really weird. So I guess eventually this woman is on the elevator with you, and then you got to go to the first floor, or you hit the button for the first floor after the woman enters.
Yeah. So, I mean, Go ahead.
Two things will happen after you hit the button for the first floor. It either descends to the first floor, and if it does, you're supposed to exit immediately the elevator and do not look back or speak. Get the fuck out of there. And I guess it's over at that point. And you can start again and try to get a different result. But if the elevator starts to go up after you've hit the first floor button, you've been allowed into the quote other world. So apparently you go up to the 10th floor at this point, and things are going to look a little different, and you can stay on or you can get off, and you'll know that you're in the other world if you get off of the elevator and you're the only one there. There's no one else around, like in this world, in whatever. And they say the power might be out. And some people have claimed that they'll look out the window and they'll see only a red cross in the distance. And this whole time, like if you're on the elevator, this woman, it's kind of sketchy, this woman's presence, but apparently she's still with you up on the 10th floor in the elevator. And she might ask you, where are you going? Right? And
right.
You're not supposed to answer her. You're not supposed to look at her. And I read on one website, she is not what she seems. It's like fucking Twin Peaks or something, you know? It's like she's.
So, like, I guess once you get to this other dimension, like, there's no way to come back, basically.
Well, is that there what is.
That's so, there's more to the game?
There is, yeah. So,
see, man, this, I don't know, dude. I've already forgot, like, how to even do it. Like, well, from what you were telling me, but
I've only explained the last few steps.
You gotta have a damn like notebook to
follow absolutely. The steps. Like I said, this is like
it's nearly a impossible process.
Yeah, you gotta.
You gotta luck out. Yeah,
you gotta luck out that you don't run into anyone that disturbs the process of going to all of these floors in sequence and not encountering anyone until the fifth floor, when apparently a young woman gets on with you.
I don't believe it, man.
Well, yeah.
It's just like,
it's pretty creepy.
It's just wait. It's like, I don't know.
It's really weird. Yeah. It's really weird. But you know, once you get to the 10th floor, like I said, you've been invited to the other world. So you can get on, or you can get off of the elevator and go into the other world and experience it. It doesn't really say, apparently there's like Reddit. Everything's on fucking Reddit. There's people who explain their experience playing this game and being in this other world. Apparently it's happened, and I mean, they could be making it all up.
They could be like high the entire time too. Well, so
of course, sure. Sure. but you know, if you choose to stay on the elevator and not get off into the other world, you're just supposed to press the button to the first floor and return home. And you might have to keep pressing the button to get it to work, apparently. So you just, if you don't want to get off the elevator into the other world,
yeah,
just hit the first floor, call it good. You were invited, you didn't go. But if you choose to get off the elevator and go explore, then that takes you into a whole other set of rules and another sequence of button pushing to get back to the home world, which I didn't write down and I'm not going to explain. Like I said, if you want to know, look it up. But if you step off that elevator and go into the other world, then you got to get back onto the elevator and do everything correctly before you can come back home. It's crazy, man.
But yeah, you said this was like, it originated in Korea, I guess. Yeah. Shoot. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty wild.
I mean, if it's North Korea, it could be fools trying to get the fuck out of there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
But if it's South Korea,
I don't know.
South Korea is, you know. There are movies. There's a movie called Dark Water. I don't know. I think it's Japanese, actually. I don't think it's South Korean. I've been watching a good amount of like South Korean shows that are fucking great. They make such good movies and good shows. But there's a Japanese movie called Dark Water that centers around an elevator in a tall building that I kind of came across in my research. I think it came out in 2002. I have not watched it, but I really want to watch it. It looks creepy as fuck. And people with Elisa Lam and the elevator game and the fact that she died in a water tank have been making comparisons to this movie because it centers around a fucking weird elevator and being surrounded by water and yada yada. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, and she, it says she's Canadian, but she does look kind
of, well, Asian. She's of Asian descent. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know where she, what her origin is.
Right. Right.
But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, who knows?
The Korean thing is just like a coincidence, it seems. Like, it's just the elevator game, just it originated in somewhere in Korea. But yeah, like that, some conspiracy theorists think that she was trying to play the elevator game.
Yeah, I saw that too.
And look where she ended up.
In the water tank. I mean, again, I don't mean to laugh, but that's crazy, man, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Like, people drinking some nasty ass water after that, but, sure. You know, sorry to hear. I'm definitely don't want anybody to die for sure. But, like you said, man, that hotel is cursed for sure.
Yeah, man, for sure. And just to clear it up, Elisa Lam is of Chinese descent.
All right.
But she was a Canadian student.
Yeah, playing, man. That's
possibly tragic. Playing a Korean elevator game.
That's so sad, man. 21 years old. Like, I know. Can you imagine? I know. You're still a freaking baby.
Absolutely. Think about all this dumb shit we did, you know, when we were in our 20s. I would have, whatever. But, you know, the fact that she was bipolar and possibly off of her stabilizers, and she could have, who knows what she's actually capable of by herself, but there are some weird like murder overtones here, and just with the water tank in general, it's like how could she have possibly gotten in there all by herself?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, man, I think like the realistic thing was she probably was murdered by somebody and they just put her in there. But, you know, the wild side of things, maybe she did get in there somehow. It's just
very possible.
A mystery, very, very you know.
She went into that other world on the 10th floor, man. Never came back.
And you said the lady, maybe she said something to the lady and she got mad. The lady in the elevator.
Maybe she talked to the lady in the elevator and
she was like,
very,
you little bitch, I'm gonna put you in the water tank.
You're not supposed to talk to her. So yeah, I mean, it could be all bad. But anyway, that's Elisa Lam. Netflix will cover everything we didn't. Mm-hmm. I don't see how there's anything else more to cover, Mike. We covered it all pretty thoroughly, I think.
We definitely knocked it out of the park.
Just cancel the premiere, Netflix. We already did it. Right? We did all the work for you.
Yeah, man. We beat them to the punch. Like you said, we're ahead of the curve. And
we're ahead of the release date anyway.
We sold their thunder, you know. We're just taking everything from Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah, Netflix.
F you Netflix. No.
Fuck you, Netflix.
Just kidding.
So, you know, beyond that, there's been one. In 2015, a body of a 28-year-old man was found outside of the hotel, another body found outside, and they still think, just like the previous body that was found in the alley where they thought it could have been a suicide, it's the same thing. They don't this guy may have jumped.
Right. Yeah, it's like unconfirmed pretty much.
But the cause of death, it says, had not been determined. So I don't know if it's still undetermined. But yeah, after Elisa Lam, there's been one potential, I guess, suicide that happened. And ever since then, nothing, because the building, like we explained at the beginning, has been kind of in flux. It's been closed. It's been rebranded. Yada yada. But there are some of these like kind of tangential occurrences, murders and whatever that have to do that involve the hotel.
Yeah, like are you talking about like Richard Ramirez staying there?
Yep, there's that. But before that, in 1947, this is probably the most famous in a way other than Ramirez. The Black Dahlia murder, Elizabeth Short.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't know the Black Dahlia murder, brutal slaying of a poor young woman, Elizabeth Short, just mutilated and found by.
Well, yeah, they said she was at the bar in the hotel, but, you know, I think it was unconfirmed. That I mean, right. Like that her murder had anything to do with the hotel, but she was just having drinks in there. But
right, she was found by a mother and her young child, just in a nearby. I don't know if it's nearby or not, but in the Lamert Park neighborhood of Los Angeles.
Yeah, actually, I was doing some research. I looked it up the other day, and I think it was like seven. It was about. I did a like a map quest of it. Mm-hmm. It was 7 miles away from the hotel. So,
I mean, that's pretty far, but maybe by LA standards, not too bad. That's like pretty fucking close. But yeah, the lore is she was seen at the Hotel Cecil before her murder. So there's a tie and it's pretty loose. It's like,
and I think I heard, I definitely think I heard that some people see her ghost in there.
Oh, really?
Like,
That's strange to me because she didn't die there.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, that could be just another like urban legend or.
Yeah, but she, like I said, she's probably the most famous tie to the hotel.
Right.
And it's unconfirmed. It's like she may have.
Yeah, it's still disputed.
She may have not, yeah. But what I read is she stayed there. Like she actually had a room there. For you know, whatever, just before she died. But it's not known. It's not known.
Yeah, I mean, this was freaking like 1947. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, what, 75 years ago, mm-hmm. or something like that. But
yeah, but it's gone down in history as one of the, you know, craziest unsolved mysteries.
Yeah, man, that's like, I feel so bad for that young girl.
Yeah, and we don't have to get into the details because
it's I don't want to talk
brutal,
about that.
Fucking brutal, and it's famous enough anyway. But there was another murder to another lady in 1964. Her name was her nickname was Pigeon Goldie Osgood. Mm-hmm. She was a retired telephone operator, and she got her nickname because she fed pigeons in Pershing Square. And everyone says she was this super nice lady, but in 1964, she was found dead in her Cecil hotel room. She was shot, stabbed, and sexually assaulted, just like all terrible stuff. And, you know, hotel staff found her. And unsolved. There's no murder. I mean, they had a suspect. The 29-year-old Jacques Ellinger was arrested, and he was covered in blood shortly after the murder took place. And he admitted to knowing Osgood, but denied having anything to do with it. And then they didn't find any evidence against him, and they let him go. So the whole murder of Goldie Osgood is unsolved to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the fucking Hotel Cecil curse, man. It's like,
yeah,
she was brutally murdered, and they found a guy who knew her covered in blood. And but they didn't find enough evidence. So he didn't get arrested. Like, he didn't get arrested for anything.
Yeah, it's like the cops, they don't even want anything to do with the hotel, you know? Like, they're just like, man, I don't want anything to do with that hotel. I don't know.
How do you find a guy covered in blood? And they said they didn't find enough evidence to charge him for this murder or anything else.
Yeah, I wonder what that conversation was like.
Whose blood did he have?
Like, what happened to you, sir? You know, why are you covered in blood?
Seriously.
And like, what was his excuse? Oh man, I just fell down. I fell, you know, or something like that.
Well, back in those days,
and they believed him.
You could say they couldn't test they couldn't find out whose blood that was.
Yeah, I mean, like, he could be like, oh, I fell, and like, you know, their next question would be like, well, do you need to go to the hospital? Or
yeah, I mean, if he has no injuries on himself, whose blood is it?
I don't know. Yeah, that's just,
you come from a slaughterhouse or something.
That's definitely bad police work for sure.
It's, dude, oh man, I mean, it's whatever, it's so corrupt anyway, they don't fucking care.
Yeah, they were probably paid off somehow
it was probably the cops.
Hotel Cecil.
Probably the cops who killed her anyway. Who fucking knows,
Mike? Who knows? Yeah.
but
crazy shit goes down.
Let's get into old Dickie Ramirez, the Night Stalker, which also Netflix just came out with a fucking docuseries about that my wife and I watched. And I didn't really know shit about this guy.
Dick Ramirez? You didn't know about him?
I didn't know about old Dickie. No. Richard Ramirez.
Big Dick Ramirez.
Oh God. Well, apparently if you watch the documentary, he was a sex symbol to these really disturbed young women who fantasized about, like, he had like a fan club, and he was
a
brutal murderer, child molester, rapist, Satanist, just everything, and basically admitted to everything. And these young women would send him nudes, and they would show up to court and like fawn after this guy. It's so weird, man.
That is weird. It's kind of reminds me of like Charles Manson. He had a bunch of women.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, people are drawn to that, like, cult of personality. They love that, like, the ultimate bad boy. But it's like, this guy is fucked up, and he was a drug addict, and he had like no teeth, and he was dirty as fuck. I mean, you know, if you want to just get down to physical looks, when he cleaned up, he's a handsome guy. I could see where people could say he's handsome, but he's just creepy.
Yeah.
Because you know
his nickname was the night. Did you already say the Night Stalker?
Night Stalker. That's the name of the documentary. Yeah. Night
Stalker. Yeah, that's his nickname.
But his tie to the Cecil Hotel is that's where he fucking lived.
Right.
During
he killed some people in that hotel.
He killed 13 people while living there.
Really? I didn't hear about that. I mean, I'm sure he, you know, killed some people, but I didn't hear an official number.
I read 13 people, and this is how crazy it was, because this is early 80s.
Yeah, it was definitely during the 80s.
You got to watch the Night Stalker documentary. It's so fucked up what this guy did, and how he even got away with it for so long is just mind-boggling to me, because he's not like a fucking criminal genius or anything. It's just baffling. But this makes it even more baffling, because I don't remember hearing about this in the documentary, but I read what while he was living at the Cecil and killing mm-hmm. people and abducting children and doing all this fucked up shit, sometimes after killing someone, he would throw his bloody clothes into the Cecil's dumpster and just walk into the fucking lobby completely naked or only in underwear.
Damn. Again, I don't mean to laugh, but
just imagine in quotes, journalist Josh Dean
completely naked.
He wrote, none of which would have raised an eyebrow at the Cecil, because he says since the Cecil in the 1980s was, quote, total unmitigated chaos.
Well, yeah, I think like in that preview you sent me for the Netflix documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one of the hotel managers was like, you know, Richard Ramirez would walk in there and covered in blood and nobody would say anything.
Nothing. That was normal activity. Can you imagine?
No, man.
No one does anything. And in hindsight, when you look back at everything that this fucking psycho did, it is deplorable human behavior to not even question this fucker. Like, yeah. Why are you naked, covered in blood? Walk, you know what I mean?
You're right.
How irresponsible and checked out are the employees of the Hotel Cecil to just see this and be like, oh, yeah, whatever. It's just, there's old Dickie again. Just
naked. Big Dick Ramirez, man.
Just fucking naked in the lobby again. Going, he must be going to go take a nap. All right.
He must, you know, fallen down a flight of steps or something, but.
Oh, that guy's crazy. He must, he's high again. He's just high.
Yeah, I mean, things are so different nowadays, man.
Pays his bills on time. Apparently, it was only $14 a night when he was staying there.
I mean, you know, I guess, I don't know. You and I, we both grew up in the 80s, man. Shit's just changed since then. Like,
yeah.
You
definitely can't walk through. You can't go anywhere naked, possibly covered in blood.
Yeah, yeah.
And get away with.
Well, yeah, that's like definitely.
And not end up on, Instagram
YouTube. Extreme.
Yeah. But it doesn't end there. Richard Ramirez is not the only fucking serial killer tied to the Hotel Cecil. Did you know that?
Yeah, I actually, was it Jack Unter? Waker or something like that. I don't know how you pronounce it.
Yeah, it's like Unterweger, Unterweger.
I think it's probably pronounced Jack Austrian. Unter Vager or something like that.
Yeah, he's Austrian. He's an Austrian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I looked it up today, you know, doing research, and I've never heard of him until earlier today, but you probably did. You find out more information about him?
His story's fucked up, man. Just listen. And this is, I've been listening to these podcasts about like bad police work and bad legal work and how just terrible the justice system is, not only in America, because it's just bad, but all across the world. And this guy is no exception. This is just this is a fucking ridiculous story. All right. So in 1991, this Austrian guy, he was known for strangling prostitutes with their own bras. Mm. And he lived at the hotel. And the rumor is he lived there to pay homage to Richard Ramirez. So when you're talking about copycats earlier, it was
copycat.
This guy wanted to be at the Hotel Cecil because that's where fucking Dickie Ramirez was. So there's this base of operation. And, you know, the area around was just teeming with prostitutes. It's Skid Row.
Yeah.
So he would, he could, whatever, do whatever the fuck he wanted. And who's going to question anything, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, the Hotel Cecil or Cecil Hotel, it's all about just the timing and location, man. Like, it's just a very bad location and
very bad timing. Very opportunistic. They knew no one gave a fuck.
And it's like, you know, like you said, the depression hit, 3 years after the hotel was built?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just been a downward spiral since then, you know?
Oh yeah, at this point it's almost 60 years of just being known for being a shithole, basically a violent shithole. But you know, this guy, Jack, he even claimed to have dated the hotel's receptionist at one point. Because you know, you look up pictures of him, he's like tattooed and handsome. They're like, these fucking dudes are like this, whatever. They use their good looks, I guess, to fucking get people close, and fucking they're just psychos. But you know, in some of the cases, but
just very you know, like you say, charismatic and like a cult leader, you know, people like that. They just, I don't know, other people are drawn to them, and
they know what they got, and they use it sometimes, you know. But in, you know, in the case of these two guys, they were out hunting people. Basically, they didn't even really need to use. They were just good looking, I guess it didn't really benefit them in their murderous endeavors. They were going to fucking kill people anyway, because you know this guy was like prostitutes. They don't care what you look like as long as you got money. You know what I mean? And Richard Ramirez was just fucking attacking people. And he didn't look good when he was killing people. He was like a toothless fucking gross junkie. It was just after the fact that his looks came into play. But this Jack guy, this is how he got, this is what's so fucked up. Aside from the brutal murders, how he got to LA is so fucked up. He was in Austria. He had already been convicted of a fucking murder in 1974, and he was already released from prison. So
right.
In 1974, he murdered 18-year-old Margaret Schaefer, and he was sent to prison for life. Right?
Right.
So then he started writing. They say prodigiously. He started writing a lot, and people started following his work, right?
Like writing books or whatever? Or
I don't really know. They don't say what he wrote, but he started getting a following. It seems like, I don't know, fucking periodicals or something.
Yeah.
But he started getting a following. And then less than a decade after being sentenced for life, his followers of his reading started a petition for his release. So he actually got released in 1990 after serving the minimum of 15 years, which is 15 years is what is required by Austrian law, I guess, for a life sentence. There's a minimum to a life sentence, I guess. And he met it, and they fucking let him go.
After 15 years, you said? After
15 years, they let him go on a life sentence because he had a following for his writing. So after,
and this was still in Austria.
In Austria, yeah. So after his release, he murdered at least seven more people before he was hired by a magazine to write about crime in Los Angeles.
WTF, bro. What's up with that?
You know what I'm saying? Like, and I don't know if the murders happened in Austria or in America. It doesn't really say. But when he was in LA working and writing, he stayed at the Cecil. And yeah, that's where he was, you know.
Dude, yeah. Prostitutes.
So he, you know, they eventually caught up with him. He had murdered some sex workers and they kind of like got hip to it, and he fled to Miami and they caught him and they extradited him back to Austria. And on the day he was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole, this is in 1994, eventually he killed himself in his jail cell.
Hmm.
And that's all, like, nothing. I guess it happened around the Cecil. He may have murdered someone in the Cecil, but he was living there while he was doing all this fucked up shit.
Yeah, man. I don't know. It's definitely an interesting spot. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I like I said, I kind of want to stay there just to see. I mean, it'll probably never happen, but
yeah. Well, I
just want to see some crazy shit go down. I mean, I don't want to like kill anybody or see anybody die, but I just want to see some ghosts or some shit. You know,
I have no interest in staying there, honestly. But I'd like to go check it out. You know,
yeah,
go check it out. You know,
yeah,
but
it'll probably never happen for me. But.
Yeah, never say never. But, you know, I mean, that's kind of it for the crazy stories. I mean, the only other story is there was a murder of a woman in Huntington Beach and by her boyfriend, Robert Sullivan, and he fled. And guess where they found him?
The Hotel Cecil.
That's right. So even
everything,
if you're not killing there or killing yourself, you're killing elsewhere. And, holing up at the Hotel Cecil.
Maybe it's like a gateway to hell or something. You know,
it's something.
Maybe it's hell itself. I don't know. It's crazy. Like I said,
and you want to stay there?
I mean, like I said, it's
don't drink the water, Mike. If you stay there,
definitely. I mean, I don't know. I doubt it's gonna ever happen because, I mean, that would be probably at least a grand. Round trip just to stay night, and
yeah, for sure.
I'm probably, I mean, it's I don't think it's worth it. But plus, I mean, I don't even know if they're open. You know, like me and you said, we were trying to see if we could book a room. But
maybe at the end of this year, it's going to be open. We'll see. TBD.
Yeah,
on that, man.
Do what?
I said TBD on that.
To be determined. Yes, sir.
We'll see. It's in flux.
I don't know. Maybe I don't want to stay there after doing this podcast.
You know, shit. Just... Well, you know, hey, let's get a room and we'll podcast from there. How about that?
That's what I'm saying, man. Like, if we get a, you know, like me, you, JPX,
yeah,
we'll just do a podcast from the room.
Yeah.
Ugh. And we might not make it out alive, but, you know.
Yeah, one of us isn't going to make it.
Yeah, who will be?
Tune in to find out, folks.
Yeah, man, that's going to be
maybe
a killer episode. No pun intended.
Maybe Christmas of this year, we'll see.
Yeah, man, how would you? There's no way that nobody would tune into that. You know, Somebody's gonna die on this podcast.
Yeah.
Who is it gonna be?
Yeah.
You would have like a million listeners.
No, it would have to be like, you know, Instagram Live or
Facebook Live or something.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
But yeah, man, like it's been fun chatting about it.
Next time. Thanks for being here and spitballing a future fatal recording session. I hope it never happens.
I know, right? I hope not too. No, but you gotta have me on again, man. I mean, next time, we gotta definitely talk about something way more positive.
Yeah, let's lighten it up a little bit. This is there's nothing fun about what we talked about, but it is, you know, very interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. You just gotta wonder because vibes are very important in the world, and some
very mysterious.
Yeah, some places have good vibes, some places have bad vibes, whether that's inherent in the location or it's created in the human psyche. You don't know. I don't know. I feel like the Hotel Cecil, it may have jumped off, no pun intended, that first suicide, and that set the tone, and it just went from there. Or
you know,
the land or the building itself is cursed for some reason, you know.
Yeah, who knows, man? It's just bad timing, and you know, like I said, like it just, like you said, it got off to a bad start, and from there it was just a downward spiral,
just never recovered. But it's a historical landmark now, and the historical, they had to say it's not because it wasn't determined a landmark because of its violent history. It's because of the building itself.
And yeah, its just historical, you mean the significance. Amount of time.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with like what it's pretty much known for, which is what we've been talking about tonight. It's a historical landmark because when it was built and whatever.
Not to be nonchalant, man, but
significance to the city.
I was thinking about this earlier. Like, I mean, it's almost been 100 years, you know, I think 16 deaths. Well, and you said 13 by Dick Ramirez.
Well,
so I didn't know about that, but I don't know. If you just look at the confirmed deaths of 16 in 100 years, mm-hmm. that's not like a massive amount. I mean, but still, it's creepy still.
I mean, that's a pretty high number for one place. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's not a fucking battlefield
or a
hospital. You know what I mean?
That's true. That's true.
Just imagine. But, just imagine any other random building. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just like anywhere in any town USA, like, oh yeah, 20 people have died in that place in the last 100 years. You're like, oh, that's weird, because it's like a bed and breakfast.
Yeah,
that's strange that's so much bad stuff has happened there, you know.
Yeah, definitely, man. It is. Yeah, weird. And like I said, I don't mean to like bring up such a morbid topic, but, and like I said, man, next hopefully you'll have me on again. And we'll talk about something way more positive than this.
This one's it's got me down.
I know, but shoot. No. That's why you just got to have me on in like a month and I'll bring you back up, man.
Yeah.
We'll talk about, I don't know, unicorns or some shit like that.
Oh, the existence, the possible existence of unicorns. That's a good one, Mike. We might have to get into that.
That was just... Yeah, I mean, that was just a random thought real quick, but yeah.
No, booked. You're stuck now. We're going to do an episode on unicorns.
All right. I'm down, man, for sure. 100%. But
it's going to be the fucked up, depressing, like Ridley Scott legend version of unicorns, you know? Like.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it ended up with a happy ending, though. Oh, you talking about with Tom Cruise or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah.
We'll get into it later, Mike. We don't have to.
Yeah, we'll get into it later.
Save it for the next episode.
But well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for being here with me. I will be talking to you soon. Apparently, I might be a guest on your show soon.
I hope so. I hope so, man. The invitation's always open, so.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. And is there anything you want to say about, you want to sell your wares, as it were, to the folks?
You know, just check out, the post show of Lost Rhetoric, Post Rhetoric. The next episode is TBD, so to be determined. And we'll keep you posted and, you know, check it out. and continue to listen to Lost Rhetoric as well.
Yeah, man. I mean, I guess the next episode might be about this episode, so that's going to be weird for you.
Yeah, I mean, we'll definitely throw this episode in there, and like I said, we got to, you know, backtrack to the I believe the Grim Deeds episode.
Mm-hmm.
And
I can't forget that one.
We can't be so selfish, and we got to talk about your show more.
Yeah,
and not do top fives, you know. I mean, our show is all good, but yeah, man, I'll be talking to you soon for sure, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. I'll try my best to keep giving you guys good ideas to steal, and we'll talk soon.
All right, brother. Thanks again, man.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon enough.
All right.
Later, Mike. Bye.
Later.
All right, there it is. Stuntman Mike talking Hotel Cecil. That was some bleak stuff. I know. It was the more we got into it, it really started kicking in. Holy shit, this is depressing. I really wasn't thinking about it too much when I was researching and reading about it. When I started talking about it out loud, it was just started really hitting home. Man, it's a lot to take in, a lot of bad stuff to talk about. So hopefully you made it through, and hopefully you found it entertaining. You know, all the bad, negative death stuff aside, it actually was really fun. It was a really fun conversation. It was a good time, to say the least, talking to Stuntman Mike. Right after we recorded this episode, I immediately went on to his show, Post Rhetoric, and I was a guest for the first time, and it was actually really fun. So if you have an interest in this show, if you have a show or an interest in Lost Rhetoric and me in general as a person, I guess, and would like to know more about the inner workings and my personal feelings about it, the Post Rhetoric episode actually turned out to be more of an actual interview than I expected it to be. They were actually asking me questions about my process and my feelings about things and the show in general. And it actually is a real interview that I wasn't expecting. So if you have an interest in hearing about that, check out the new episode of Post Rhetoric. You can find it anywhere you listen to podcasts, and it's out now. You know, if this episode is out, that episode is out at this point. So definitely listen to this episode. You apparently already have if you've made it this far. But after you're done with this, check out the post-rhetoric episode. I think it went really well. And it was, like I said, way, way more, I guess, serious at times than I ever expected it to be. You know, talking to two of my oldest childhood friends, just kind of shooting the shit. It definitely is goofy at times, but, you know, it's also a real interview. I guess that's it for the week, man. Shoot me any ratings, any reviews you want on Apple Podcast. Get on there, say something. It's been a long time since I've gotten any feedback, and I would love to hear from you. Anywhere you can like, subscribe, do it. Share a link, tell all your friends, say a kind word online. All of this rating and reviewing, it goes a long way, because the more people talk about it, the more it gets kind of promoted, the more it's more visible to folks, the more it's suggested to people randomly, and they actually can see that the show exists and it gets on their radar. So the more you talk about it, the more people can find out about it. And I would really appreciate it. Write me lostrhetoricpodcast@gmail.com. Talk to me about anything. Give me any suggestions. If you have any stories relating to anything I've ever talked about in the 33 episodes of this show, I would love to hear from you. Find me on Instagram at lostrhetoricpodcast, on Facebook at lostrhetoricpod. And let's talk. Why not? Fuck it. Just, you know, reach out. I'll write you back. you know, unless you're saying some really fucked up shit that I don't want to get into. So don't do that. I prefer you not do that. Let's keep it on the level, folks, is all I'm saying. All right. That's it for the week. Come back next week. I got another really good episode lined up for you. And I think you're going to really enjoy it. And I hope you really enjoyed this one. And until next week, everyone, please stay sane.